It's 3:08 on March 28th, 1996, and I'll be speaking to him about the Vietnam War and his experience in it. Mr. Moore, can you tell me about your background information, such as where were you born?
I was born in Wilmington, North Carolina on a dark day in January 1952.
Okay, can you explain to me, who are some of your family members and a little bit about your education?
Okay, I was raised in a family of two boys. I have a younger brother named Donald, who's about 8 years younger than I am. My father was Joseph McLean Moore. My mother, still living, is Sylvia Moore. And neither one of them had ever served in the military. My mother had a college education. My father did not. He worked in various sales-related type jobs and all. As I was coming along, I joined the Army shortly after getting out of the high school in 1970.
Okay, Mr. Moore, can you please explain to me how come you joined the military, what reasons, and when?
Well, I went in when the draft was an active deal. At that time, they had a number they would pull out each year, a number of Social Security numbers, and it determined if you were going to be drafted or not. And my number was like 52, and they were taking 250-something that year, so it was pretty certain I was going to have to go into the service. And so before they drafted me, I went ahead and signed up because I wanted to get in a specific area in the military, which was radio broadcasting, which is what I've done all my life. So I signed up in the Army because they could promise me that I would get into broadcasting radio and TV coverage. They could not promise me where I'd be going, but they did tell me I'd be doing radio and TV. So that's why. It was 1971 when I signed up in the Army.
So what did your average work day consist of, like as you woke up in the morning, like beginning of the day?
Well, once I was stationed in Thailand, you're saying? I was sent to Thailand in 1972 in like April of that year, and I stayed there for 2 years. I worked for American Forces Radio and TV Service at Utapao Air Force Base in Thailand, which was the largest B-52 base in all of Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. From there, all the bombing raids that were launched on South Vietnam and later to be discovered in Laos and Cambodia as well came out of Utapao Air Force Base. I was in the Army, and since that was an Air Force base, it was a little bit unusual because the majority of the people, 99% of the people there, were Air Force personnel. I lived on the base. The radio station was located there. There was an Army base about 10 miles away called Camp Samisan, and they also had coverage of our radio station. We had a repeater for our radio and TV stations to where they picked up the coverage as well. The reason they had Army personnel and Air Force personnel there was because we're serving both services, and so they wanted to feel like they were, you know, they each service member would feel like he had some representation in their radio station. So they made us, you know, of course we had to say Army, you know, Sergeant First Class Joe Moore, or, you know, whatever, and the Air Force guys had to give their rank too, and therefore the guys felt like they had some representation there. As far as my work day, it varied over the course of 2 years I was there, because even though it was military, we still had to operate it like a civilian radio and TV station, and that we had various shifts to operate. Somebody had to do the early morning shift, somebody had to do the late night shift, somebody had to do the news in the afternoon, somebody had to do the news at night. So it fluctuated. When I first got there, I was doing the afternoon show on the radio station and the late news on the television station. And so that required me going to work at about 1 in the afternoon, and I got off at 11 at night. And there was plenty of time in between that to go to the NCO club, have a few drinks, you know, have dinner, goof off a little bit, and we did our fair share of that. But as far as the work itself, it was just like working at a commercial radio or TV station. We played the latest hits. American Forces Radio and TV Service has a great system of getting the music out. They pressed their own records. It was AFRTS label. And every week you'd get a package which would have one whole side. There were 33 1/3 LP type albums they sent out. One whole side would be various hits, like the latest hits that had come out that week from the States. On one side would be like the top 40 hits. On the other side would be the country hits. And then you'd have another disc that would have, rhythm and blues hits. And then the other side of that might be, jazz or some other type of music. But usually you'd get two albums a week. Plus you'd get a whole box full of syndicated programs. Wolfman Jack had a show, and it was pressed on one of the AFRTS discs. Tom Campbell, there was a number of shows like that. They were like 30 minutes to an hour in length. I think we even had a few shows that were 2 hours in length, and obviously that took more than one disc. But in that box, that's what we looked forward to each week, was getting the stuff from the States. It was going to be the new music we could play and all the syndicated shows we'd be airing during the week. In my first year there, I'd get up first thing in the morning. We lived off base because we chose to do that. We could have easily stayed in the barracks, but we wanted to kind of live in the culture because Thailand is a beautiful country, and the people there are beautiful. And we learned to enjoy the food and just their local hospitality. It really was something special. So we lived off base. We got up in the morning, messed around the house for a while, maybe go down to the marketplace and, see the old mama-sans and papa-sans fixing their, their lunch and stuff. And we knew some of the language, so we'd speak with them, and they all kind of came to know us as being pretty friendly guys. There was a large contingent of American military forces there that were not very easy to get along with as far as the local population was concerned. They belittled the locals. We kind of named them the old movie, The Ugly American. We called them the GI Animal. And, I mean, these guys would go downtown and get drunk and throw cans out of the back of the taxi cab and, just with no regard for anybody. And we were totally opposite of that. And so the locals that we came to know appreciated that in us, and we made some very good friends. As I said, I'd go to work about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We'd catch one of the local buses to ride to the base. It cost us a nickel, I think it was, to get to the base. And to go through the main gate, and the security was pretty tight. I mean, even if you were military in a uniform, you had to show your ID, and they'd search you sometimes if there was an alert up. Once you got on the base, you'd catch a taxi cab for 10, 15 cents and ride to where you needed to go. And, of course, where I went was the radio and TV station. I'd go in, get ready to do my air shift in the afternoon, pull out the records I was planning to play. The military is such a bureaucracy. Obviously, they have the best filing system in the world for everything. And so for music, you could find any record that had ever been recorded by any artist. You could find it by the name of the song or the name of the artist that was recording it. So if you had requests, and we did take requests, you could easily find the piece of music. We did the commercials we had on the radio station were not obviously retail sales like you have in America, but it was commercials for things like re-up in the Air Force, re-up in the Army, give to the United Federal Campaign, donate blood to the Red Cross, don't get VD. I mean, all the things that were pertinent to GIs. But the radio show was formatted just like it would be in the States. We'd play 5 or 6 in a row, do a little patter in between the songs, and then play the commercials, in that case the public service announcements, come back out with the jingle, and go back into the music. We tried to make it sound as much like a commercial radio station in the States as we possibly could. And from a lot of the GIs there, we got the feedback that, hey, when we're down on the beach having an afternoon off or in the USO club or something, you guys are on the air, it sounds like, I'm back in Chicago or back in Norfolk or wherever I'm from, And we worked hard at that, and a good reason for it is a few of us that were there had commercial radio experience before going to Thailand. So we just kind of relied on that. And it was a lot of fun. It was great duty. That if I could have stayed in the military and been assured of staying there doing that, I probably would have stayed for the rest of my life. But, of course, things changed in Thailand as they did the rest of the world, and, that all came to an end. But it was a great experience. And our job was really probably one of the easiest and most sought after on the entire base, because there were other guys who were loading bombs and who were flying planes getting shot down over Vietnam, and they were like 2 buildings down from us where that was going on.
Okay, well, what are some of your more incredible news stories, or incredible or unusual news stories that passed through?
Probably the biggest news story was the things we didn't broadcast. The military censored everything that came through, and I think this would fit well in this particular category because even the weather forecast. We did a weather forecast like you would see in the States with a man standing there pointing at a little map saying a high pressure system is moving in over the Rockies or whatever, you know. But we couldn't do it about Thailand. We couldn't talk about Thailand. We talked about America. And of course, I guess the thought was, well, folks want to know what's happening back at home in the weather. But also, you would think people would want to know what was happening there in Thailand so they could plan their next day or whatever. We couldn't talk about that because the information office was afraid, this is their reasoning, that the enemy would hear our weather forecast and plan their attacks accordingly. So we couldn't talk about local weather. The news, we had Associated Press, United Press International, and then a military news wire. And, of course, the big machines that run 24 hours a day and they send down the news stories. Well, Associated Press and UPI came through Bangkok and then was edited and sent out to the field. And we were one of the several stations in country that was in the field. When we'd go check the teletype to see what the news was to use in our newscast, be it radio or TV, you'd have like a story, you know, from New York about something going on, and a story from Chicago about something going on, a story from Paris, and then suddenly there'd be like maybe 2 or 3 feet of just blank paper, and then there'd be another story from New York, another story from Washington or whatever. Well, where those blanks were on that page, that's where they had censored the stories about Vietnam, because they did not want us to say anything about Vietnam. I remember one time a B-52 crashed trying to land, and I mean the whole base looked like it was on fire. It was just down at that end, but it was a B-52 that had been shot over Hanoi. It was trying to limp back in. They didn't quite make it, and they crashed, and they had to close the highway, and I mean there were houses on fire, and the woods were on fire, and the whole thing. We were told, of course we knew going in not to say anything about it, but we were reminded that, oh yeah guys, don't say anything about that. And I mean the whole base was on alert, the fire trucks were over there and everybody was there and it was the biggest thing that ever happened, but we couldn't mention it on the radio or TV station. So that's kind of the atmosphere we had to work under. We talked about everything except what we were all there for, which was the Vietnam War.
So I guess that was a pretty big scare. Was that the only time you felt like your life was in danger around the base?
Well, I didn't feel in danger at that time, really. There was a couple of times where communist infiltrators or whatever would sneak on the base. They bombed an airplane one time on the runway. And there were a few instances like that. But we were pretty much isolated from that. We were too far behind the enemy lines to be worried too much about any kind of attack or whatever, but the security was very tight, and like I said, sometimes when you came to work in the morning or afternoon, whatever time you came in, they would even search you just to make sure, you know, that you weren't, you know, trying to slide some explosive device in or whatever. There were a few calls, you know, security calls like that, but for the most part, we were in good shape.
What kind of food was provided? Like, was it provided by the military, or were you on your own for providing yourself with food?
Well, we could certainly go to the mess hall and eat any time we wanted to, and of course that was on the military's ticket. We chose, like I was saying earlier, my friends and I, when I first got to Thailand, luckily I ran into some people who were already into the Thai culture, and so the very first night I was there, they had me off base eating at a Thai restaurant, and I really learned to love the food. It's real spicy, it's a lot of stir fry stuff and all, and so we just, you know, usually chose to eat off base. There were also restaurants on the base that fixed Thai food, and we would eat there sometimes just by choice. But you know, if you eat in the mess hall, you'd eat the regular things you'd eat in any army mess hall in the world, you know, potatoes and meat and gravy and noodles and, you know, whatever kind of stuff and all. But you know, Thai, there were little places that had like fried rice. You know, a lot of times for lunch, we just run outside and get chicken or shrimp fried rice, something like that. And I think it costs like 20, 25 cents, 30 cents, whatever, in our money. And that was pretty reasonable, you know, lunch. In the evening, you know, we'd be downtown. we go to a little side market or something, get a quick little meal. And again, you know, not paying that much for it at all, and it's very good and fresh to